I'm going to read from Hebrews chapter 2 this morning. Hebrews chapter 2, that begins with the first of five warnings that Hebrews has about how important it is to stick with what we have learned and what we believe. And then he talks about this tremendous dignity that God imparted to humankind, which has been marred by sin, but has been restored, redeemed in the person of Jesus Christ and made available to us through him. We must pay more careful attention, therefore, to what we have heard, so that we do not drift away. For if the message spoken by angels was binding, and every violation and disobedience received its just punishment, how shall we escape if we ignore such a great salvation? This salvation, which was first announced by the Lord, was confirmed to us by those who heard him. God also testified to it by signs, wonders, and various miracles, and gifts of the Holy Spirit distributed according to his will. It is not to angels that he has subjected the world to come, about which we're speaking. But there's a place where someone has testified, "What is man that you are mindful of him, the Son of Man that you care for him? You made him a little lower than the angels. You crowned him with glory and honor and put everything under his feet. In putting everything under him, God left nothing that is not subject to him. Yet at present we do not see everything subject to him, to man. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels, now crowned with glory and honor, because he suffered death so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. And bringing many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering. Both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. He says, I will declare your name to my brothers. In the presence of the congregation, I will sing your praises. And again, I will put my trust in him. And again, he says, here am I and the children God has given me. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might destroy him who held the power of death, that is, the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it is not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. For this reason, he had to be made like his brothers in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. The writer of Hebrews here promotes the idea that we have a salvation that's been made known to us regarding the redemptive work of Jesus Christ, and we very much need to hold on to that. We need to stick to that understanding that God has testified, he's shown evidence of this. There's very good, solid reason to believe in the redemptive work of Jesus Christ. And then he writes about the fact that God made man with glory and dignity, but man, because of sin, has fallen from his position of honor. But we do see Jesus, who has that glory and dignity that man was created for. And in him, we can have an expectation of dignity in this present world as we follow him and have his help, and glory in the world to come. The world to come. Conceived in liberty. 150 years ago, 1863, Abraham Lincoln at Gettysburg said, 87 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it, far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did. It is for the living, for us the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us. that from these honored dead we should take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. 67 years before, in 1776, on July 4th, the Continental Congress had rendered in unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America what we know now as the Declaration of Independence. At the time when Abraham Lincoln was speaking, the United States of America were, as he said, engaged in a great civil war. It was 2 years in. There were another 2 years yet to go. There were a lot of lives that would be lost. The causes of that war were manifold, but first and foremost in the forefront of everyone's mind, all of those who seceded from the Union, was the issue of slavery. Conceived in liberty, Abraham Lincoln said. A nation conceived in liberty. Liberty for who? Well, liberty for everyone, according to the Declaration of Independence. That was the idea. There was a lot of struggle over that, over implementing that, how that was to be implemented. But Congress, July 4, 1776, and unlike Abraham Lincoln's speech, which is a little over 2 minutes long, I won't read the entire Declaration of Independence, but I will read a portion of it. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth a separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles, and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to effect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And it goes on from there and talks about the need, on the basis of design, to make a break with England and to start over fresh. And in the last paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, we therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states. And continues on to talk about the protection of divine providence to which they mutually pledge their lives. Lincoln, in 1863, in the midst of the Civil War, spoke of a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. He spoke of this nation under God having a new birth of freedom. A government of the people, by the people, and for the people should not perish from the earth. The Continental Congress, 87 years earlier, in 1776, had spoken of the laws of nature and of nature's God. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, including life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We, the representatives of the United States of America, do indeed appeal to the authority of the good people of the colonies and declare these are and a right ought to be a free and independent people according to appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world and of the rectitude of our intentions. And for this, the support of this declaration with firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And dozens of men signed that document. And Abraham Lincoln was consistent with the things that he said about the idea of a nation conceived in liberty. But on what basis did Abraham Lincoln make those statements? And on what basis was the Declaration of Independence written? There are references in both of those documents to the fact that men are created equal. And in fact, if you strike that one clause, none of the rest of it makes sense at all. None of the rest of what they said works if you take out that idea that there is a divine judge, that there is a divine provider of governments among men, and that all men are created equal. If these men had been coming from a materialistic perspective, from the perspective that it was in progress of coming into being in the days of Abraham Lincoln and became stronger over the succeeding decades, the idea of evolution, the idea of materialistic evolution, none of these concepts could have ever risen to the fore. The concept that all men are created equal. No, if materialism is correct, then what we live in is indeed a dog-eat-dog world, where those who survive, survive on the basis of strength, not on the basis of right, not on the basis of divine providence, but on the basis of what anyone can do for themselves, whatever power, whatever goals can be achieved. But both Abraham Lincoln and the signers of the Declaration of Independence appealed to divine providence. They appealed to a creator who made all men equal and gave to all similar rights. Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27 was certainly in the minds of those men, both the signers of the Declaration and Abraham Lincoln at Gettysburg. God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Made in the image of God. Endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Man was made to rule over the creation. Genesis chapter 5, verses 1 and 2 reiterates that concept. This is the written account of Adam's line. When God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. He created them male and female and blessed them. And when they were created, he called them man, or the name Adam. When they were created, he called them Adam. And the whole race, the human race, derives its origin there. Paul spoke of this when he was on Mars Hill, when he was at the Areopagus in Athens talking to a bunch of pagans, many of whom actually were more atheist than pagan, didn't really believe in the Greek gods so much anymore, but these philosophers at the Areopagus in Acts chapter 17, verses 24 and following, Paul said the God who made the world, that's who he wanted to talk to them about, because their religion, their paganism or their pantheism or their atheism would not give a sufficient basis for the principles that he was espousing to them. You had to go back to the beginning. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth, and does not live in temples built by hands, and he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. If there is not an independent creator God, apart from the universe, who made the universe, then nothing has meaning. Nothing that we do has value and enduring meaning. But if there is a God who created, then everything comes into focus through the reality of what God has done. He is not served by human hands as if he needed anything, because he himself gives all men life and breath and everything else. This is echoed in the Declaration of Independence. From one man, he made every nation of men, that they should inhabit the whole earth. It doesn't matter where you live, what your language is, what your skin color or various physical features are. From one man, he made all men to inhabit the whole earth, and he determined the time set for them and the exact places where they should live. God did this so that men would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as some of your own poets have said. We are his offspring. Now, along with that, there is the consideration that there is, as described by the signers of the Declaration, there is a need for governing authorities because man has fallen from this position of dominance that God had given. We had a reading earlier this morning from the second chapter of the book of Hebrews. I just want to rehearse a couple portions of that from Hebrews chapter 2. In verse 6, we have the reference to the Psalms where it says, "There is a place where someone has testified, 'What is man that you, God, are mindful of him, the son of man, that you care for him? You made him a little lower than the angels. You crowned him with glory and honor and put everything under his feet. And putting everything under him, God left nothing that was not subject to him at the beginning, at the creation.'" Man was in this position of dominance over the cosmos, over the creation. But we don't see it that way now. We do not see everything subject to him. Why? Well, because of what happened there in the garden, the episode with the serpent, the falling into sin, the coming of death, and all of the consequences that went along with that, that altered the course of human life, human thinking, human history. Sin became a reality, and man did not have that position that God had created him for and placed him in. But the writer of Hebrews goes on and says, okay, we don't see man with all this perfect dominion that God handed to him. We don't see man in his fullness of glory that God designed him for. But we do see Jesus, who became a man, who lived a human life, who gave his life in order to redeem us from the curse of death, who now is seated at the right hand of God. We see him fulfilling for mankind what mankind was meant to be, and we have the assurance that in him and through him, we can have the same destiny. We can share in the same. But in the meanwhile, because man is broken, because humanity is damaged by sin, there is a need for governing authorities in this world, as the writers of the Declaration alluded to, and as Abraham Lincoln alluded to there at Gettysburg. As Paul wrote in Romans chapter 13, and this is the basis of what those men were talking about. As Paul wrote in Romans chapter 13, verses 1 through 5, "Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established." The Creator, who gave the liberties that those men talked about. "There is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves, and they entrusted themselves to him who judges justly. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from the fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and he will commend you, for he is God's servant to do you good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience." That was Paul in Romans 13. Peter, likewise, in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 through 17, wrote, "Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men, whether to the king as the supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish men. Live as free men, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as servants of God. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the brotherhood of believers. Fear God. Honor the king." These principles of liberty. Live as free men, but don't abuse your liberty. Don't use it as a cover-up for evil. Live as servants of God. Live with respect toward all men, in particular toward those who have been given divine authority in governing positions. Honor the king. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men. And one of the reasons for that that Paul cited was concern about punishment. And one of the reasons that Peter cited was because we want to live as servants of God and to love the brotherhood of believers and to show this accountability, which Paul refers to in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10, when he says, "We must all appear." Well, who is all? Well, it's everyone sitting here, male, female, whatever age, whatever ethnic background or origin, everyone in the whole world, everyone who has ever lived, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive what is due him for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad. Now, Paul is saying there that what we do matters. It makes a difference. It makes an eternal difference. Again, coming from any other perspective, other than the perspective that says we have been endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, there's no other perspective that gives genuine value to the things that you do and says that they have lasting consequences that truly matter. But the Christian faith system, the system that says we were created by God in His image, the system that says that we were made with dignity and honor and for a purpose, also gives legitimate value, real meaning, to the things that we do every day of our lives. The things that we do make a genuine difference in the eternal scheme of things. That you may receive what is due for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad. And this is the only basis for good behavior. Peter and Paul said we ought to obey governing authorities because it's right before God. Not just because they have the power to enforce, but because it's right before God. Not just because that things have developed in some process into a situation where some people have more authority than others, but because this is indeed ordained by God. In Romans chapter 15, verse 7, Paul wrote, "Accept one another then, just as Christ Jesus accepted you, in order to being praised, to bring praise to God." And over again in the New Testament, we have the idea put forth that what we should do should be based on what God has already done. Accept one another, why? Well, because of power, because of wealth, because of beauty, because of what? Well, because Christ accepted you. That's the only sufficient basis for good behavior, is what Christ has shown you, what Christ has done for you. Everything else is subjective. Everything else is based on transient values that will go away, which is to say that virtually all of the values of our culture today are based on things that are transient and will not endure. No one today in America could sit down and produce either the Declaration of Independence or the Gettysburg Address, because those values are no longer the cultural values that are held in common by the American people. That all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. We've moved too far into relativism, materialism, and various other isms that don't acknowledge the divine authority of the Creator, which is necessary for that kind of a basis in government. Not to say that we aren't still subject to governing authorities. We are. The same governing authorities that we talk about here in Romans, where Paul and Peter are talking about the Roman governing authorities, we are subject to them. They still have a legitimate role in the scheme of things. But we need to recognize that the only basis for making genuinely good choices is the basis of knowing what God has done and what God has said. Accept one another as Christ accepted you in order to bring praise to God. Why do you treat other people the way you should? Is it for a short-term benefit? Is it to get ahead? Is it to achieve favor for some particular advantage? Why do you do that? Or why do otherwise? Why bully or why not bully? Why use power and authority in a good way rather than a bad way? Well, the only legitimate basis for that, the only meaningful basis that can really stand the support of the test of time and opportunity, is to do what God has done because you're made in the image of God. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 through 7, "Be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly loved children. Behave as children of God. Imitate Him. Know that you're loved by Him. Live a life of love, just as Christ loved us and gave Himself up for us as a fragrant offering." As Joshua was saying, memorials can have great impact, especially when they are personal. And the memorial that we have for Jesus Christ each week is intended to bring that home in a personal way, that He gave Himself for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. "But among you there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality." Now, people say that morals cannot be legislated and morals are subjective. A lot of people speak in such terms these days, relativistic thinking. But the fact is, morals are legislated all the time. Any law you have is a legislation of morality. You can't go too fast. Why not? Well, because it's going to hurt somebody, because there's harm to be done there. This is a moral decision. All the laws that we are expected to follow have moral connotations to them. Morality is legislated all the time. But we have a morality that has been defined by God. And it's not just the best there is, it's the only one that really works, the only one that has enduring value. "Among you there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality or of any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people." No matter whether a materialistic world recognizes these things or not, we must recognize that God's standards are standards that we need to follow for our own good, for the glory of God, and to create the kind of culture or maintain the kind of culture that we really do want to live in. "Nor should there be obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse jesting, which are out of place. You know, of course, jesting can be hilariously funny, but that doesn't mean it's good. A lot of times we need to make judgment whether something is entertaining and is also good. Entertaining isn't enough. Is it good? Is it right? Does it uphold the dignity and the character of God's purposes in our lives? No obscenity, no foolish talk or coarse jesting, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. For of this you can be sure. You know, I don't go away from Thanksgiving feeling bad. And by Thanksgiving, I don't mean the holiday. I mean, when I experience and share in expressions of gratitude, I go away feeling good. When I go away from obscenity or foolish talk or coarse jesting, I go away kind of, I don't know that that was such a good time or not. And unfortunately, a lot of the world's choices are going down that kind of an alley. For of this you can be sure, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a person is an idolater, craving the various things that humanity pursues, the materialism, such a person is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of such things, God's wrath comes on those who are disobedient. Therefore, do not be partners with them. Remember, we started with the words of Abraham Lincoln, that we are in a nation that was conceived in liberty. It was brought into being in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. But don't ever lose sight of that clause, that all men are created, because without that, the rest of it doesn't work. The life that God wants us to live is based in the premise that we are created in His image, and we are created unto good works in Christ Jesus. That gives meaning and purpose to life and makes it possible to live an upright life in the culture in which we exist, no matter where the culture itself goes in terms of values and expectations.